Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Russ. A couple weeks ago, Gallup came out with their annual employee engagement report. And for the first time in a decade, they've announced that employee engagement scores have dipped. A couple years ago, employee engagement scores went up at the beginning of the pandemic. But I think now we're at the point where there's so many things going on regarding wellness, resilience, people being zoomed out, people feeling depressed, people feeling burnt out, just tired of COVID. It's impacting HR leaders. Then on the other side, we're in the middle of the Great Resignation, where people either want to work remotely or they want to return to the office, or there's some form of hybrid. And I think this is throwing a lot of HR leaders for a loop. How do you prepare for the post-COVID world and a new workforce taking all the lessons learned while at the same time achieving all the organizational goals, but creating an environment where people feel like they belong, valued, and are safe and secure? So we're going to talk to an expert, Dr. Rochelle Haynes, the founder of Crowd Potential. She is an HR guru, and she actually had a conceptual framework about having an agile HR workforce based on remote work and the gig economy, and all this came out before COVID. And then COVID happened, and the world kind of blew up because she was ahead of the curve. Dr. Haynes is a Barbados native, but she is setting up shop right now in the UK, in Cheltenham. And last fall, I was on a virtual panel as part of the Carib HR Forum done by Dale and Francis Wade out down in Jamaica. And she moderated our panel, and she was great. And I've been trying to get her on this podcast. We actually take this in the fall, and it's coming out now. So without further ado, check out the thoughts of Dr. Rochelle Haynes. So, Rochelle, how are you doing this morning for me, afternoon for you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Yeah, it's been a nice and relaxing Monday morning, surprisingly. So, yeah, enjoying. How are you?
You know, be everything to everybody, but then find out where I can stop and take breaks where I can. So that's the main thing. So
fair enough. That makes sense.
And you're based where in the UK?
I am in Cheltenham. So that is in the Southwest. So if you know where Bristol or Wales is, I'm near to those cities.
And most of my friends know the UK based on the Premier League. So you say different places.
Manchester, Liverpool.
Say, yeah. Okay. That helps me with geography.
Yeah. I don't think Bristol has a strong team, or no, I'm not anywhere near the greats. Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, my great Manchester United isn't as great as I thought they would be. So I'm a little upset with that. So
my condolences.
I'll live. But more importantly, I've got you. We're going to have a great conversation. So sure. Briefly, you know, tell me about yourself.
All right. So I am Rochelle. I am a senior lecturer over in the UK, but I also started a consulting firm called Crowd Potential Consulting. Originally, I'm from Barbados, and I moved over here 11 years ago to pursue an HR profession. I was quite green to it because I came from the background of being a primary school teacher, but then realizing that I don't want to be in a class every day with 30 children, I made that big career jump. And since then, I've completed a PhD over here. I've worked with a lot of UK councils. And more recently, I've been doing a lot of global speaking and global workshops and interactions because of a framework that I came up with called Gig HR. So we came up with this framework to help businesses better manage remote and independent teams. And we started the research project for that in 2018, and the research project finished in December 2019, and we published it in February 2020. And basically, our findings were saying that businesses are not ready to work remotely and to engage their remote staff, and they need to address this urgently. And here's our framework to do that. That's February 2020. And then we know what happened March 2020, the whole world shut down. So, yeah. So despite being in an awful pandemic, that was a nice silver lining for us, because then work got really busy, things picked up, we started getting a lot of phone calls, we were featured in Forbes for the work that we did. So yeah, it's been an exciting time. So yeah, you can call me a gig HR expert.
So when you talk about this research, and then the pandemic hit, did you find it made the research real immediately? Or did you find, wow, here's some gaps we probably could have covered?
I think it made the research relevant immediately, because we were already tackling a lot of the gaps. We were talking about we started with the focus of digital nomads. We saw more and more people were choosing to be a digital nomad. And what we mean by that is to work location independent. We kept meeting people that were saying they're quitting their full-time jobs to travel and work at the same time. So we started out looking at those group of persons, but then we expanded it more widely as we got to talk to more and more people and managers, because we started realizing, okay, there are a lot of conflicts that companies are experiencing. So we were already looking in the area of remote work. We were looking at independent contractors. So then when everything just blew up, then yeah, our research became really relevant, and we spoke on a lot of national and international platforms about the research. So I'd say it was pretty comprehensive in terms of the kind of requests we were getting from clients and people who were saying, okay, this is what we need, and this is what we need now.
So when you look at where we are, and I was having a conversation with someone last week where I said, gosh, when we all went home March of 2020, I thought it was going to be 2 or 3 weeks. And I don't think most people thought we would be into the fall of the following year, going into the winter. And we're hearing so much regarding wellness and depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
What do you think are critical to sustaining resilience at the individual level, but also for leaders and as they're looking over their team or their organization?
Okay, I'll start with the individuals first. I myself, using myself as well as an example, because I do feel during the lockdown process or during the whole year and a half since the pandemic, that I experienced some burnout. One of the things I think is crucial is managing expectations and being less hard on yourself. I think that's been my two lessons about it. Managing expectations, being less hard on yourself, but also having systems that make the work easier for you. So I don't know if you heard the saying, work smarter, not harder. And I think that's been very important in the pandemic. So for example, if you have, like yourself, a podcast, because you know I'm a fellow podcaster as well, where I was, let's say, recording episodes every week and then editing individual episodes, then going back and cleaning this up and cleaning that up. Having a good team to support me in that, creating a schedule for when I do certain things, compressing work into certain times, that helped. But also managing the expectations of the persons I was delivering the projects to, if I thought that maybe this project was bigger than I thought, maybe going back to the client and saying, hey, well, actually, this is going to take some additional time. These things need to be resolved. And then on top of that as well is just taking some time for myself and not being afraid to say no. I think I used to say that I was a yes person, but recently I've become more of a no person. Actually, I've gone through that phase where yes was brilliant at the beginning of my career because it opened a lot of opportunities, but now I'm to the point in my career where I'm realizing no is more powerful, in that I manage people's expectations, but I also make sure that I am not pushing myself over the limit and I can still be of use and service to people by not burning myself out. On the client side, on the company side, I think the main thing is to be very adaptable and flexible, and also to be very supportive and take a more empathetic, let's say, approach to leadership. So one of the things that we've seen in the pandemic, for example, is that different demographics have been more harshly affected by the change. And as a result, their careers have suffered more. So for example, women who tend to have more of a child caring role or more of a carer's role in general, in terms of being promoted in the organization, it's shown, several studies have shown that women have suffered a lot more, promoted a lot less, because they're not the ones that are physically present. They can't respond as much, as quickly and so forth. So I think managers really need to understand their individual employee situations and see how best they can support that, just to make sure that some persons aren't being, let's say, feeling the impact of the pandemic more harshly, or let's say unfairly, having their performance unfairly rated as not doing enough and so forth.
This seems like the perfect place to take a quick break and then get right back to Dr. Haynes.
What are some of the tips, practical tips that can be applied? So if I have a staff, and let's say 40% or women, let's say I've got a staff of 10,
yeah,
four are women, what are some of the things I can do to hopefully not put them in a position where they don't feel it's equitable, that they don't have access, but also make sure that they, along with the rest of the team, are navigating this part of the pandemic with the great resignation and figuring out what the return to work is between hybrid, virtual, and full-time. What are some actual practices or tips I could use?
I would say start with having a conversation with those women, having a conversation and understanding what is it that might be impeding their work process, but also understanding, you mentioned well-being earlier, understanding how they feel about working from home, how they feel about returning to the office and so forth. I know a lot of companies have tried to, for lack of a better word, just drag people back to the office, say, okay, well, they've said we can go back, just come back in. And that process has been really traumatic for some employees. And when they've come back into the office, then their performance dips. So I think having that first initial conversation, finding out how your employee is doing mentally, professionally, how they're feeling, and also understanding what are the things that might be impeding the work process, or has been impeding the work process, if you've noticed that there's been a change. Then from there, you can decide, let's say if this person's struggling to return the office, how can we set up a system that will help to phase them back in? So rather than, let's say, having them come back 5 days a week, maybe start off with having them come back 2-3 days a week first, if the job allows. But then also in your remote working process, if it is that they're not going to be as physically present as other people in the office, make sure you have the right communication mechanisms and online project systems, for example, Asana, Teams, whatever the case may you're using. And then make sure your employees understand how you're using your different communication tools to communicate. And for what type of communication, so you don't get a scenario of those who are working from home becoming invisible and those who are in the office are the ones that are seen as present and committed and gaining all the, let's say, the professional rewards. So I would say that's just a few things that you can start with.
So it sounds like you're talking about things like effective communications, trust, empathy, voice, emotional intelligence.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It really means that organizations really have to stop and assess whether their supervisors and managers have the proper skill set to interact with their employees.
Yeah, and that's crucial. It harkens to the framework that we created. We created this gig HR framework where it was in the shape of a house to convey the idea of well-being and safety. But then in that house, it was made up of 4 rooms, which was gig rules, tools, skills, and thrills. The rules addresses the sort of protocols that you're going to outline, the expectations, the roles, and so forth, the work habitat. How are you going to prepare that in an adequate way that people can work hybrid or remote and efficiently and effectively? Then you have the tools, which speaks to the tech system that you're going to create, the ecosystem, where people understand how they'll be used. But then what you just mentioned in terms of the managers, that our third room, gig skills, applies to that, because we designed this framework in a way where we recognize that not everyone has been prepared to work remotely. And we see a lot of digital transformation processes during the pandemic failing because everybody concentrates on, oh, okay, which tools are we going to use? Let's bring Teams, Skype, Asana, Trello. They're trying to use everything at once, but they're not actually stopped. They haven't stopped to think of, well, why are we using these tools? How are we using them? Do we need them all? How will they, what sort of purpose are they supposed to be serving beyond communication? So the skills room speaks about how you can train and support your manager in a way that prepares them to work effectively in a digital or hybrid environment, because they might not have come into the company with those skills. They might not be used to leading a team virtually. And there's a lot that goes with that. As we know, it's harder to build rapport online as it is to do in person. So if you have a manager who, for example, was promoted to a manager based on their experience in the company, rather than being trained as a manager, then they might experience additional challenges to trying to manage in a remote and a hybrid way.
So based on this framework that came out in February, and we're 21 months later.
Yeah.
If someone said, okay, for the customers you've worked with, here is the one skill needing to be strengthened for managers and supervisors, what have you found that one skill is?
Listening. Okay. I would say listening is the main thing, because we do have a lot of persons who they have attempted to implement the framework without first consulting the employees. And the first thing you need to do is to be able to speak to your people rather than decide upfront what you think is best for them. So I think listening is a real priority. Also, going back to that sort of being supportive and more supportive or servant leadership. Let's go servant leadership. But thinking also about how you can create a sense of belonging in that environment. And I know a lot of people in this time, especially persons with disabilities, have complained that the digital space has not been made accessible to them. So I think it's one thing to create and to have your framework in place, but have you truly understood the workforce that you're putting it in place for and consulted with them to understand whether or not it is suited for everybody? So I'd say listening is the main one.
And it sounds like that listening has got, where you talked about listening happening at the beginning of the process before implementing the framework. It sounds like with the disabled people, you've got to continue listening throughout the cycle.
Throughout, absolutely. Which also points to having some sort of evaluation and monitoring processes in place as well. So you can see and you're getting that feedback on how the system is working for your employees. If it's creating efficiency or more burden or problems for your employees.
All right. So let's go back to where you were talking about how some of the personal things you've done regarding setting barriers and I call it like the reverse Shonda Rhimes. So Shonda Rhimes did a book called The Year of Saying Yes.
People
have realized you got a year of saying no.
Oh. It's amazing how it turned around.
As you were navigating this, where do you think for you it was at its worst for you personally? And how did you kind of persevere? What adjustments did you make?
Do you mean from the working side, or you just mean me personally and all?
You personal. You personally. Take the doctor off Rochelle and tell me about Rochelle.
I think this year has been more challenging than 2020. 2020, lots of stuff blew up professionally, so it was a good year professionally. But I found I was beginning to burn out, and also the pandemic was taking its toll. So a lot of things happen during, let's say, the first half of this year, for example. There was a very strict lockdown. My father was in the hospital a few times. I had a very close friend that I lost in April in an accident. Then I was in the midst, in the aftermath of a volcanic eruption. So there, it was quite a crazy year. And during this year, I was answering, during all this time, I was answering emails, trying to deliver on deadlines, trying to make sure my social media content was uploaded on time and every day. And I just found myself just completely burnt out to the point where I said, you know what, I think that's the point where I came to, when I just realized I was tired all the time. I felt drained. I was beginning to feel a bit cynical about everything as well. And then I started, I had a conversation with a friend and she said, you sound a bit burnt out. And I actually looked it up a bit more and it was saying signs of burnt out. You become cynical. You're always tired. I think I'm pretty burnt out. So I think when I took some time off, I took a good month off and I traveled within the UK just to get my bearings again, just to, for lack of better words, refresh my soul and my energy. And in that space, I just thought to myself, well, screw it. I don't care if my social media content, if I post today or not, I'll forget that. I am happy to disappear for a while. And to, while I'm getting stuff done in the background or while I'm taking care of me in the background, no use to anybody drained, you know? So I think that was in August of this year. And I only started picking back up seriously pace from end of September, really. So I'm now back into a more steady routine, but it feels not stressed. It feels not pressured because I've let go of a lot of those pressures to, okay, make sure you're posting on social media on time. Make sure you're doing this. Make sure you're not missing all these opportunities. And then, as we said, learning to say no, because you probably know yourself, like when you're invited to a lot of speaking engagements, yes, some will pay you and some will not want to pay. Some you decide that you will do for free for a number of reasons. And then others you decide, well, actually, because of the time that this demands and the amount of work it demands, this is work that should be paid. So I've gotten quite strict with that as well, because I found that I was committing to a lot of things where they were taking a lot of demands on my time. But yeah, I wasn't being sufficiently compensated for it. So I think that's where, rather than feeling bad for saying no and wondering if I missed something big, I've just gotten comfortable with saying no. This is not what is best for me or for you at this stage, at this point in time. So yeah, that's been me, my journey personally this year.
So what's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself?
I'm too hard on myself.
Explain that.
I think I'm a busy person. I'm constantly busy. And if I'm not busy, then I feel guilty for it. So anytime I stop and anytime I sit down, I feel guilty. And that's something I struggled with for a long time. And so I just found too many people were saying the same things all the time, because anytime I took a break, I felt like I was being lazy. I felt started having like that imposter syndrome and feeling like a failure and all these things. And my friends would just be like, when let's say I enter a meeting or someone invites me for a gig or just talking to some of my friends and how they describe or introduce me or my work or that sort of thing. I'm like, is that what you really think? I hear over here feel like an abject failure, and that's what you think, that's what you're getting. I was like, okay, so I guess I'm not doing as bad a job as I thought. I think it's learning not to be hard on myself. I could be quite hard when I stop, because I can feel quite guilty if I'm not doing something. But know that's slowly draining. Still a work in progress. I still get that sometimes, but I don't get it as often. Now I learn it's perfectly fine to take a break. It's perfectly fine to just stop and take time for myself.
Cool. Last question. What is the best book you've read recently?
That's a good one. Just because I've been going through a number of books at once. I've been reading a lot of different things at the minute. I've read a book recently about eating with intention. And then I was in the middle of still in the middle of a suspense thriller. In terms of a good business book that I've read, what is the name? Oh my gosh, it's not coming to mind. I'd have to go on my Kindle, but it's not coming to mind. But it was basically a book about time management, and rather than trying to do everything yourself, building the right systems, having the right systems in place and the right team in place so that you can concentrate your time on the strategic things as a leader of a company, rather than trying to do all of the daily operational things, which won't grow your business as much as you can. Another really good one that I read recently, well, a few months back, was one called Set Boundaries, Find Peace. And I think, yeah, that's been the biggest influence on a lot of the conversations. A lot of the things I mentioned in the conversation earlier about learning to say no and just managing expectations and that sort of thing.
Well, Rochelle, Dr. Rochelle, thank you for taking time on this Monday to navigate the time difference and having this conversation about your conceptual framework. We'll add the link to where people can contact you and when we send this out.
Sure.
So
thanks for having me.
No, it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank Dr. Rochelle Haynes. Similar to the pod with Tamika Brown, she talked about resilience, like once it really got to how she navigated this personally. And I kind of resonated with her where she got to a point where she felt like she needed to take a break. Same thing happened with me. So from an HR standpoint, if you want to listen to similar pods like this, there are three real good pods by three HR gurus. Dr. Doretta Rhodes, I think that's episode 2. Who is the senior vice president of HR for the Atlanta Braves baseball team. Steve Pemberton, the CHRO for Work Human, and Cheryl Middleton Jones, who is the CHRO for Co-op Financial Services. Gotta thank my man, Reggie Quinterly, for this track, the Virginia Gentleman. We got some heavy hitting thought leaders and storytellers coming up. Like the pod, share the pod, subscribe to the pod. With that being said, everybody have a great day.